Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
As America prepares its presidential election on November the 3rd, we look at the life of a president who 40 years ago was called a dangerous extremist, who wanted to put nuclear weapons in space and who proposed large tax and spending cuts hoping to destroy the power of Washington.
You wouldn't get a uniform, report to the scrubs.
Why?
Because I think you'd make a football player.
I doubt
Try
it.
Try it anyway.
All right, if you insist.
Now, wait a minute. What's your name?
Kip. George Kip.
Raised in the small towns of Illinois, he was the actor who changed America, helped bring down the Berlin Wall, and became a lion of the right.
If you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
A movie star and Democrat, as the president of the Screen Actors Guild, he worked to root out communist influence in Hollywood.
I never, as a citizen, want to see our country or become urged by either fear or resentment of this group that we ever compromise with any of our democratic principles through that fear or resentment.
His speech in 1964, a time for choosing for Republican presidential nominee Barry Goldwater, earned him national attention as a new conservative spokesman.
One side in this campaign has been telling us that the issues of this election are the maintenance of peace and prosperity. The line has been used, we've never had it so good. But I have an uncomfortable feeling that this prosperity isn't something on which we can base our hopes for the future.
Listen to part one of Ronald Reagan, from Illinois to California on 10 American Presidents, from Roy Field Brown and the author of Reagan, American Icon, Ewan Morgan. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, and wherever else you get your podcasts.
Hello from Philippa at the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Now more than ever, people are often turning to a book to provide them with a great escape, and I usually get asked, which book should I read next? There are so many to choose from. Well, help is at hand. The QuickBook Reviews podcast does what it says on the tin. It gives you some quick book reviews. You can tell how long it took me to come up with that market-leading title. Well done, me. And it covers all sorts of different books you might be interested in. And, hopefully, a happy half hour with me chatting about life, cups of tea, biscuits and books. Lots of books. From crime to thriller to general fiction, audiobooks, even children's books. If I think it's good, I'll want to tell you about it. And if I'm not such a fan, I'll tell you that too. It's not about literature or fine arts. It's just about finding a good read that makes you want to keep turning the pages. Finding books that deliver a great ending. Fancy a listen? Download the QuickBook Reviews podcast and see what you think.
This podcast is a Roy Field Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Charlotte from Northampton and her teenage daughter who'd like to be anonymous.
Folks, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centered in Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the golden coin That is Royfield Brown. And with me I have the buried treasure, who is...
Kerry Warbis.
And we're joined by that hidden bit of bounty who goes by the name of...
Peter Fickling.
And the last part of this week's Sunken Booty Votes is you. Now, this week's Dumby Dum is from Charlotte and her teenage daughter, and they're from Northampton. It's a wonderful symmetry, because last week, the Dumby Dum was from somebody in Southampton. So thank you for that. Now, Kerry, if somebody from West Hampton or East Hampton would like to send us in a Dumby Dum, how can that be done?
I really liked that Dumpty Dum, by
it
the way.
It was wonderful, wasn't it?
And the fact that the teenage daughter wished to remain anonymous. Yes, that is a common thing. They either don't want to remain anonymous. It's one extreme or the other, isn't it? So bless her. I thought it was brilliant. So if you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105. Leave us a message on SpeakPipe or send us a text message starting with dumb to 077-862-00690. And thanks to our social media supremos, Cosmo for his podcast roundups, Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Lucy B. Freeman.
On this week's episode, we hear views from... Witherspoon, he's back. Claire from Clapham, she's back. Mary, not contrary, she's back. Miranda, she's new. And Pat. But first, it's our burning topic of the week. And it is, would Jennifer really listen to Susan on the radio? And it's according to my notes here. Actually, this is a deeper topic than it seems. So it's our hot topic of the week, and this week it is, would Jennifer re-listen to Susan on the radio? As according to the notes here, actually a deeper topic than it seems. Pete Ficklin, over to you, sir.
Well, factually, the answer is yes, because we heard her listening to Susan in the car, but I know that a couple of weeks ago, Kerry was really, really quite passionate in her sort of disbelief of that ever being possible. And of course, then when we heard Jennifer confronting Susan about the faux pas of blurting it all out on air, she then came up with a series of rather sort of ham-fisted excuses for why she did occasionally listen in. But I don't know. I mean, this is based on very little, but I got the impression that Jennifer probably would flick it on when she's in the car, because she accused Susan quite enthusiastically of being a gossip, but I think she knows of what she speaks, being one herself. I should think she'd probably quite enjoy listening to all the gossip or hearing Susan blurt out all of her secrets from the boudoir.
Previously, I was incredulous that Jennifer would A, listen to Radio Borsetshire, and B, write in. And I just don't imagine her broadcasting the fact to the county that she listens in.
The fact that she listens is definitely sort of seems credible to me, but the idea she would ever reveal it to the world were definitely to Susan. That seemed impossible.
And it was funny when Susan sort of said, didn't she, I'm surprised you listen to the show. And she was like, oh, it's sometimes on in the background, really playing it down. It doesn't really fit with our Jennifer, does it, at all?
But of course, it now turns out it was a rather necessary way of getting them in a room and clashing about, you know, Alice and Chris's upcoming, whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, we still don't know, do we? What's happening with that?
Yeah, a bottle of vodka in a baby grow that's going to fall out in about 6 months' time. And actually, I mean, I was quite grateful because, I mean, I'm buckling in for a very grim half a year with the Archers, and I'll be grateful for any light relief we can get. And I think that Susan and Jennifer might be a good way of sort of offering you some other perspectives when they need to keep it serious, but also keeping it light as well, because there's always some quite easy comedy when the two of them are in a room together.
Yeah, I think it's either going to be very light or very, very grim indeed with those two, because at the end of last week, they both made a pact about keeping each other in check during the pregnancy, so they're not over fussing and so on. But yeah, it's got the potential to lead to huge clashes, hasn't it, once Susan realises Alice's failings, if you like.
It's a good device, as well, because it'll be a great way of getting information to us about the pregnancy without always having to have Alice and Chris kind of doing all the heavy lifting and having sort of some rather tedious back and forth. Everyone involved in the podcast has kids, and even as you're going through it, you know that you're boring other people to death talking about, you know, your children sometimes. So that'll be quite a useful way of kind of, you know, having them, you know, sort of talk about the pressures on them as potential grandmothers will be quite a good way of kind of a spoon feeding us some of this stuff, and also giving you that kind of nasty brooding menace that you were alluding to, Kerry.
Yeah. Susan was very masterful in turning Jennifer's rage around, I thought, to the point where she actually invited her to go on the show to share her culinary tips and stuff.
When I was a teenager, there was a moment when I realised just how clever my mum was, and I then immediately felt this kind of shame that I hadn't spotted it before. She kind of, in a moment, went from being this kind of the person who just sort of cleans up my sick and, you know, makes food magically appear. I mean, obviously it wasn't this binary, but, you know, there was this, but I had this horrible moment when I realised just how bright my mum was and that I'd sort of missed out on it a bit before. And then I think, so have I made the same mistake twice? Have I just only recently realised how clever Susan is, or is this something that's been brought in more recently? Because I feel like the Susan that I knew was not as bright as the version we're getting at the moment.
It was really odd, because when I first heard it, I was like really cross with Susan for broadcasting it. But when I listened again, Chris literally said, she says to Chris, "I take it, I can tell people." And he goes, "Oh, yeah. Alice is still getting her head round it. So you'll probably be doing us a favour." So he's the stupid one out of anybody, I thought.
Yes, and and it's a very much of a go big or go home approach to things. Like, there's hiring a town crier to sort of gently walk around the village, and then there's walking around with a T-shirt cannon, just firing, you know, sort of nuggets of information straight into people's faces. I mean, which is effectively, when if you deploy Susan, I mean, it's a very blunt instrument.
Well, just like you, Pierre, I thought, well, it was unfair of Jennifer to have a go at Susan, because Christopher said that Alice was going to go and tell her folks, didn't he? You know, so as far as Susan was concerned, you know, it was all out there in the wild, so to speak. But I've got a more slightly fundamental issue with the whole thing, is that I don't believe that Jennifer would be a Radio Borsuch listener, full stop. I think she'd be Radio 4 or Radio 3. I don't think she'd be... I don't think she'd be getting her feet dirty listening to Radio Borsuch, full stop. Even though a member of her family, in parentheses, in air quotes, was on air, because the other issue is that she just thinks she's better than Susan, which kind of came out in the whole argument. And she said it, you know, she said it as much, didn't she? And though Susan was masterful in patching things up and to saying, look, you know, it was a mistake, I was just really excited, etc., and they had this great kind of come together moment at the end. But would Jennifer let her have it with both barrels? And Jennifer's snobbery, you know, came out and was there for us all to hear. So I don't think she'd have been listening full stop. And I have a more, that's my fundamental kind of like, you know, point.
Yeah, but you're very much.
Sorry.
Oh no, just Royfield's very much the Jennifer of our bunch. You know, you said you're the Jolene. I'm definitely the Susan. You know, kind of can't keep my mouth shut. But the other day we spoke, Royfield, and you were listening to MSNBC, the Morning Joe show, and I was taken aback that a man of your erudition, wit, and raw intellect would lower yourself to something so base. So, you know, if you're capable of having that kind of range of different sort of you know, media inputs, then why not Jennifer?
Peter, how low do you go on your radio listening?
Oh, well, Dumpty Dum, actually, when I check in each week. What's my lowest? I don't know. Probably Quickly Kevin podcast, but that's really good anyway. I mean, but it's quite sort of a grubby, childish humour. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about radio here. You know, which do you, other than Radio 4?
I used to listen to Heart, specifically travelling to Birmingham from London because they did party classics, but their party classics were 80s R&B to early 90s house. And it was, and that's utterly a sweet spot for me. So, yeah. But I wouldn't be seen dead listening to Heart any other time. And that's purely in the car, and it was family music. It meant we could all sing along to all the tunes.
Yeah. With Heart, it's just really repetitive, isn't it? It's sort of on a loop. You hear the same track 1,000 times. But I get your point about that particular genre of music, for sure.
Yeah. I've just realised how I can answer your question, Kerry. Obviously, there's music you choose to put on, and then there's music you're gifted through your marriage to a wonderful, wonderful woman. And my wife has the worst taste in radio in the world. So of a Saturday morning, I will have the worst radio show in the world, which is that Saturday AM thing on Radio 4. And then just as I'm losing the will to live, then I get Rylan on Radio 2. So that's my Saturday morning, and I cannot stand it.
Oh, I love Rylan himself, but I was thinking Jennifer could be a Radio 2-er. I had that in my mind. No?
Jennifer's got sort of street smart. She's an emotionally intelligent person, but she's not particularly sort of highfalutin in her tastes otherwise.
Really? Doesn't she have like a sparkling water? Well, she used to have a sparkling water tap in their kitchen. Come on, she's very highfalutin. And, you know, she's forever in Borsetshire Life magazine. You know, come on.
If Vince Casey is obviously that, like, the ultimate arriviste, but I always got the impression that sort of Jennifer was kind of like, yes, it was all a bit sort of cast lines at the end of the driveway.
No, and kind of lots of brass and gold. And... couldn't disagree with you more. No, she's got class. Jennifer's got class. She hides the fact that she's come up from quite humble beginnings very well. So the fact, you know, she had her early teenage pregnancy with Adam, and that's all kind of very hidden. And she's reinvented herself as being the squire of the village's wife, and she does it very, very well. She doesn't like to be reminded of her past and the fact that when she grew up in a pub. You know, and I think, and I could be wrong, Cosmo, please rescue me, but she went away to boarding school. That's the reason why she sounds very different from Tony.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So she wouldn't listen to Elaine Page on Radio 2 then.
Is that for when we reverse the question? Is that your naughty listen then, Kerry?
No, it isn't. No. I listen to I know she exists, but no, I don't go there. I listen to Radio 4 all the time, really.
Oh my god, that takes some guts.
Yeah, I know. And Six Music is the other one. Occasional. Yeah.
I completely had you down as a Six Music woman. That comes as no surprise.
Yeah.
Though, Peter, your radio listening habits, can you just kind of sum them up for us before we go on to the next section? Because the listeners are hanging on their edge of their podcasts here, quite literally.
I'm sorry to have left everyone waiting this long. Basically, it's just podcasts now. I don't have any time for any radio, unfortunately. So it's just podcasts. Yeah.
Ooh. Right, there you had it first, folks. Peter Fickling doesn't listen to broadcast radio anymore. He's above all that. He's all about the podcasts.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First off, it's Pat.
Hello, it's Pat from Leeds. Love to everybody there. I'm just ringing to say thank you for the Zoom tonight. I thought it was really good. And thanks for organising it, Royfield, and for everyone who contributed. I've got a very mini plot prediction, which is that Harrison is going to be absolutely fine with Fallon not wanting to have a baby. I think he's going to be great, not going to really be a story. But I could be wrong, of course, but that's my prediction. Anyway, I'm glad I've somehow, in a minor way, redeemed the name Pat for Peter. Love to everybody. Stay safe. Bye.
Yeah, I agree, Pat. As you may have heard, I did say exactly that thing on the last podcast, that Harrison will be fine about Fallon not wanting a baby. I agree with that prediction.
I could really do with them, you know, staying together and being sort of persisting and being a supportive and loving couple. And it would be a nice clean balance to everything that's going on with Chris and Alice. I was shot down quite violently a couple of weeks ago, and I suggested that there was some affection between Chris and Alice still remaining. Do you think that this week we've seen a bit of that? That, as you know, I know Chris has been a bit cloying and sort of overprotective and over the top in his kind of excitement, but that's kind of necessary for the plot. But Alice has been showing quite a lot of affection in return, and sort of concern for, or is that just guilt?
Oh, I think it's heavily driven by guilt. And when I hear them as a pair, I don't think of them as a pair. And I just don't. I don't feel that natural warmth or anything. You're right about the guilt factor, because it colours everything about her, I think.
Yeah.
For me. However, I did listen intently to Fallon and Jazza and thought, yeah, there's still a bit of something there between those two.
So that's what that would be, and that would be absolutely fantastic. Because I think Harrison's a lovely character. I really enjoy him. I think he's getting better all the time, but he can F off if it gives Jazza a chance at happiness. You know, I will sacrifice many, many things to get Jazza his shot at Fallon.
Well, he did have his chance in the late noughts, didn't he? They did have one night together. Was it at a festival or after a festival? There was something to do with them going away and stuff. But
that's been eclipsed, though, hasn't it? Because more recently he did pour out his heart to her.
Yes,
about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
But then there was him getting her wedding dress, wasn't there? There was all that.
Oh, that was. Yeah. So poignant, that bit. Yeah.
So I think that ship has sailed, our Peter. I really do. You know, he'll always have a little thing for her, but I think in terms of something which is a hot topic, so to speak, I think it's gone.
Yeah.
But I agree with you though, Auntie Kerry Warburton, that Alice and Chris just don't sound like a couple. And it wasn't that you were shot down a few weeks ago, Peter. I just disagreed. I just thought, nah, you know, their relationship emotionally is so lopsided. And, it's all about Chris adoring her and giving her, giving into her full stop, not holding her to account, etc. And I think it's in large part because he thinks he's punching way above his weight and he can't believe he's landed an Aldridge.
There have definitely been scenes where they've been giggling and laughing together. And that felt like, quite genuine. But more recently, the baby storyline, they're just so disconnected.
I think the clumsy analogy I gave to you the other day when we were on the phone, Kerry, was that I feel like we're halfway through a marathon. Our nipples are already bleeding. Our feet are like blocks of ice, and we're just willing ourselves to the finishing line. And it was the same with the Rob and Helen plotline. I didn't care about Helen, and so I had to think about it was almost active. I had to think about the poor people out there suffering the same problems she had, and try and use my compassion for real world people to try and find some kind of level of interest in the plot with Helen. And the same thing with Alice and Chris. Yeah. I mean, it's so grim. It's so unpleasant. We can see what's happening. It's all happening in slow motion ahead of us. And also when they're being forced to read out this stuff, it doesn't seem plausible. I mean, the actress who plays Alice is doing a great job at when she's been doing the drunk scenes, but Chris has transformed into this weird kind of sunny delight addicted sort of puppy creature. Oh, I guess I am, Mum. You know, you got all kind of like hyped up about being a father. It was all too much. So I just don't care. So I think I'm struggling.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with the Helen thing that you've just said, and with Alice and Chris as well.
Right, so that was our Pat, and Pat, I think you got your money's worth out of the team, and Peter acknowledges that you've helped rehabilitate the name Pat, So
I did. When you said it's you, Pat, I immediately thought Pat from Leeds. Lovely Pat from Leeds. So yes, full rehabilitation. Job done.
So well done to you, Pat. Well done. Now it's Upper Low East West Side.
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, everyone in Dumpty Dum Towers and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. First, a thanks to Royfield for putting together a fun-filled two-hour celebration of our community on Friday. 2 weeks ago, I was pretty surprised when Lillian encouraged Alice to have a drink, and I guess not surprised to hear she drank moderately during her own pregnancy. In my book, moderate drinking is a good deal of drinking. Specifically, the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse defines moderate drinking in women as up to 3 drinks in a day or 7 drinks in a week. I thought it was irresponsible for the Archers not to present countervailing advice. I was then aghast when last week Peter reported that a doctor told him and his wife that it was okay for her to have a drink to deal with the stress of pregnancy. I consulted some professional guidelines for the following so as not to get it wrong. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that women who are pregnant or who are planning to become pregnant abstain from drinking alcoholic beverages of any kind. Full stop, end of story. So, I was pleased to hear this week that the health professional talking with Alice and Chris did indeed repeat that advice and warning about drinking. Alice then lied and Chris was defensive. I'm still scratching my head as to what happened in Alice's visit to A&E. I thought the info must have been shared on some NHS electronic records base, but I did some research and discovered that the NHS doesn't use electronic medical records, having dropped such efforts to convert a number of years ago. Finally, on another note, Peter, we must have a talk about one of the best musicals ever, Hamilton. Watch it on Disney Plus for a greater understanding of the lyrics. And the music is far from being all rap or hip-hop. Whatever genre it is, it's outstanding. Talk to you soon.
Ooh, what's the reference to the musicals, Peter?
Oh, it's a very brief aside last week. I'm a bit Buddhist, had tweeted in, and or someone had, and they had, and it, the way they'd done it was one of those kind of slightly syncopated, semi-rhyming raps that Lin-Manuel Miranda did in Hamilton. You know, the rhythm kind of goes a digga digga bigga bigga digga bigga big. You know, there's a sort of anyway. I will confess, my prejudice against Hamilton is not so much the actual product itself; it's the kind of bunting draped, squealing middle class kind of excitement about it. People who without even thinking will kind of dismiss any number, you know, all the genres that Witherspoon just listed, and at the same time wet the bed with excitement because they've got tickets to Hamilton. So you know, it's more of a prejudice about the phenomena than it is about the actual product itself. While we're dealing with Witherspoon's call outs of my preferences and my wife's preferences, I was surprised as well this week when the midwife said the new guidance was absolutely no drinking whatsoever. And sort of when Charlotte and I would have had this conversation would have been about 3 years ago. So I don't know if anything's changed since. But just so Witherspoon doesn't worry too much, Charlotte pretty much didn't drink in the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So that I think it might have been one glass of champagne towards the end. But yeah. But I think actually, to bring it back to the Archers, I think one of the things that she did enjoy was the knowledge that she might be able to. And I think that's important, isn't it? It reduces the stress. And Kerry and I were talking about, because Kerry's on a dry October, aren't you, Kerry? And we were talking about sort of, if you screwed up one evening and did have a drink, you shouldn't then the next morning just feel terrible and immediately sort of like, oh, that's it, I'm done. I'll just carry on drinking.
Yeah. Yeah, true. In fact, I think I may have a pass on Saturday when I'm going to London to see the Warhol exhibition with my friend Jeremy, who's not on Twitter. I think I will drink on Saturday, partway through Sober October, and I won't feel bad about it because I haven't seen him for months, and then I'll get back on the sober side of things. So, yeah.
Just on Hamilton, I will admit that I took into the whole phenomena of Hamilton a whole load of working class chip on my shoulder. I'm black. Black people did rap. What's going on here? Prejudice into it. I did. And I was disabused of my prejudice twofold. Firstly, by hearing Lin-Manuel Miranda explain how he got into hip hop and his utter forensic understanding of the genre. And then him saying things like, and people don't quote me on this, but so Biggie Smalls is Hamilton and Biggie Smalls rapped like this. He syncopated every third word and he did X and Y and Z and blah, blah, blah. And Tupac is Thomas Jefferson. Tupac rapped like this. Early Tupac. And he has such a love and understanding for rap that it's hard not to go, okay, you've done the work, mate. You know what you're talking about. And I don't claim to be any particular big fan of hip hop or rap. So after I heard him talk about it in such glowing terms about the genre, then I had much more of an open mind. And I was one of those. When I came out of watching it, I was then one of these middle class, woohoo, that was amazing. That kind of changed my life. Yahoos. Considering that also I have a big love for American history and presidential history. So I had an idea of, you know, the story of Hamilton kind of beforehand. So in terms of a spectacle musically, is it really clever? Absolutely. In terms of being a cultural moment, okay, maybe some people went over the top, but it's bloody clever, Peter. It's bloody clever.
It's part of a long list of things that I deprive myself of because I just am too stubbornly anti the kind of the hoopla that surrounds it. And I'm not the only one who has that failing, but I am particularly bad at it. But Royfield, I mean, I never for a minute thought you'd be into rap. When I imagine a young Royfield, I imagine you dressed like Isambard Kingdom Brunel with a kind of a 3-foot-high stovepipe hat. You know, sort of watching endless Fred Dibner tapes that you forced your parents to record.
So, Peter, am I Isambard Kingdom Brunel or am I Jennifer Aldridge? I'm just trying to work out who am I?
Well, you're complex enough to have both of those strong personalities jingling and jangling around. And we're back to.
It has to be said, I kind of got a divorce. At least a separation from hip hop after Public Enemy. Up until that point, I was down with it. So Sugar Hill Gang, all the early stuff, a bit of Run DMC, my Adidas, love all of that and whatever. Early LL Cool J, Rock the Bells, all of that. And then Public Enemy, I went, yes. What a sonic overload. You can walk into those songs and they just like hit you over the head with a crowbar. They're just like sonically so powerful. The energy. You got NWA. And then I thought, nah. There was just too much effing, and as you would say, Pete, Jeffin. And it was just nihilism. It was nihilism for the sake of it. And I kind of like got myself a divorce. Just before I forget, right, I've been moved by a bit of media this week, and talking about rap has actually kind of brought it back to me. And I made a point because we had a family film club. Maisha and I and Maisha's mum, we did family film club, and we watched Rocks. And I recommend everybody, it's on iPlayer. It's a story of a teenage girl who finds herself stuck with her younger brother. Her mom just absconds and they live in East London. It is the most heartwarming story in terms of sibling love and care. And then it's such a tableau of London. There is one character who's only on there for about 2 minutes who says, I'm quarter Chinese, quarter Jewish, quarter black, and I think quarter Pakistani. And you just can't get more East London than that. All the performances are delivered with such realism It's like those early 1960s kitchen sink realism movies and stuff with Albert Finney, but updated for the 2020s. All of the kids who are in it, none of them are actors. None of them went off to Italia Conti school and any of that. How they've got these performances out of them, heaven only knows. The teachers are believable as teachers. And her little brother, who she looks after, he's a star for the future. You've got to go and watch it. It's called Rocks. It's on iPlayer. Mm. It will blow your barn doors off. It's just brilliant. And all these kids just went through these sessions in community halls and then got to play the roles in it. And it's brilliant, utterly brilliant. It's called Rocks. And you think it's going to be dark, and it is dark, but it ends up in a lovely place. And it's just brilliant. It's on iPlayer.
Fabulous. But what happened to Alice in A&E?
That's a good question. That's a good question. And I think that ambiguity there, Auntie Kerry Warburton, has been left there deliberately, hasn't it? What tripped me up, though, was when the midwife talked about her being pregnant and drinking, that seemed to be news for Alice in that moment.
That was very strange. There was a long scene with her and Chris as well, wasn't there, where they were kind of, he was like, well, you know, my friend Bate, she was on holiday and she was drunk every night. And, you know, they were going back and forth.
That was a very good Chris
kid
Peter.
Turned out all right. Yeah. Did you wonder about whether the midwife was picking up on Alice's peculiar reactions to the drink questions?
Yeah.
Alice, are you okay? At one point, because she'd obviously was having a moment of processing what she was hearing.
Mm. Yeah, it's like, Kerry, how are you? Oh, fine, not thinking about crack cocaine at all. I mean, her reaction was so sort of, you know, it's like, oh, okay, Kerry, yeah, you know, let's file that piece of information away. She was just sort of immediately was like, you know, oh, but yeah, I can have a drink occasionally, can't I? And then we'd already had the very depressing sort of like, you know, EastEnders finish to the week before with Lillian and her, you know, when she had a glass of wine in the pub, that was very, very depressing. So one thing I would want to acknowledge is I do see the value in the plot line. I do remember we talked about it weeks and weeks and weeks ago, that it's something none of us know a huge amount about. And I already feel like the bits of research I've done, I do feel I know a lot more about it. And I am looking forward to, is not the right word, but I am sort of reluctantly accepting of my need to maybe learn a bit more about it. I mean, to Witherspoon's point, my most current thinking was that a glass of wine here or there was considered better than the stress, because that was my experience only 2.5 years ago. So you know, there you go. It's already been a learning experience.
We found out that basically they will not be able to tell whether or not the fetus has alcohol
that's surprising
syndrome
as well
via the scan. So it's only once the baby is born, and even then it won't be definite until, you know, further down the line when tests happen and blah, blah, blah. In other words, you know, that was definitely something that was going into Alice's mind, thinking, I'm not going to know until it's born. And then what? So that, I imagined, would steer her more towards considering abortion. We will see.
She puts her in a very difficult place, doesn't it? I mean, she's trapped. She's got a mother's love for her potential child. She's got the huge guilt of the damage she knows she's done, because I know that we've gone backwards and forwards about the denial, but the scales must have been ripped from her eyes by now. And she was in denial about the effect of drinking. She wasn't in denial about how much she was drinking. She was putting like a positive gloss on it. It's like, oh, this is all part of my fun lifestyle. She wasn't in denial about the fact that she was consuming large amounts. And I think that you know, she must be in a very dark place.
There was a really strong bit where Chris went, oh, don't worry, they're talking. That midwife, oh, he was actually angry with the midwife, wasn't he, for being alarmist, and was sort of going, oh, well, that she's talking about someone who drinks a bottle of vodka a day, don't worry. And we're all thinking, yes, that's why we're all worrying, because that's what she's
I nearly did my Chris impersonation again then, but and just to say, I always apologise for my bad impersonations, but I'm actually from the West Country, so I'm allowed to do that one, I think. The slight Wurzel. But yeah, what was it he said? Oh, I've a right mind to complain. Yeah.
He's hugely irritating and suffocating, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So in which case, very well written.
Sympathy towards Alice. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I tell you what, there's one character who's criminally underwritten. It's our Jazza. And just before we go on to the next caller in a row, because I think we've done an awful lot on, Alice and Chris. Scratch cards. Where do we stand on Jazza and the morality of him wanting to keep somebody else's scratch card? And wasn't it lovely talking about booze, just to link this properly up with the previous topic, that there was Jazza saying, come on, Alistair, me old pal, let's have a bit of the home brew. Alistair saying, absolutely not, it's too early in the day. Next scene, Alistair was pissed. Made me laugh.
Yeah, it did me until when Jazza was talking about he's had a few blackouts, Reece,
yeah,
where he couldn't remember. It was a bit, oh, that's weird, isn't it? He's okay on the alcohol front as far as listeners are concerned. Alice isn't.
That's a very good shout. That is a very good shout. And I had forgotten that. You're completely right. It was so jokey and, oh, it's just Jazza when he's having blackouts. But yes. Yeah.
But I loved that Alistair actually went for it before midday. He had a few beers. You know, I'm not averse to that. Daytime drinking's quite lovely. But yeah, I like their relationship very, very much.
Mm. Yeah. On the one hand, it's fantastic that Jim has built him in this kind of granny flat on the side of the house. But it's also slightly weird that Jazz has almost been put out to retirement, you know, at whatever age he is. What was it we decided? Sort of 35 to 40, roughly?
Mid-30s, yeah.
Yeah, so he's living in a granny flat, sort of slightly grace and flavour, and with, you know, his benefactor and his benefactor's son. It's not an ideal situation to act as a springboard for your love life.
And when he gets a grand, or thinks he's got a grand, he thinks he'll buy motorbike leathers to attract Jade, the biker girl. How old are you? You know, this 35-year-old or whatever he is.
I don't want to be a pedant, but you're going to get a very bad snake, an equally crappy iguana, and an even worse set of motorbike leathers if you're trying to get all of those for a grand. motorbike leathers.
Have you even got a motorbike?
I don't know. Mm. But, you know, the milk float there, they don't have much of a... They've got the open sides, haven't they? So that'll, you know, keep the flies off him.
Jazza, Alistair and Homebrew dealt with on Dum-de-Dum, folks. Don't say that we don't do all the hot topics in last week's Archers on this show. Witherspoon, thank you for that. Peter and Auntie Kerry Warburton, you can stand down now because now we have Miranda.
Hi there. It's Miranda, Apple Android app on Twitter. I am trying to register onto your site, but it won't let me sign up anywhere. I know you're a select little group. Should I take this as a hint?
Do you know, I've followed Miranda. She's followed me for a very long time and I've never heard her before. So what a shame she can't register. What's the answer to that one, Royfield?
Am I typing into Twitter? Apple Android. Yes, she's got a in her picture. She's got a jaunty kind of Breton sweater, and then kind of multiple dogs, surrounded by multiple dogs, and what looks like a very well kempt and nice garden. Not too kempt either, which is always, you know, a sign of an evil person. Just the right amount of kempt.
Yeah. And I think you think we're more select than we actually are.
I'm an absolute whore when it comes to Twitter. Someone followed me, follow back. No discernment whatsoever.
It's some quirk of the software. It's nothing against you. And I will look at the logs at the back end of the website and see if I can't see what's going on. I suggest you send me an email to roifield@gmail.com. roifield@gmail.com. And we'll get to the bottom of it, my dear, and we'll get it sorted. So no worries, but accept anybody. Yeah, go on.
Miranda, write in the email about the Archers as well.
If we're not already your best pals and your family, we want to be, and we'll get it all sorted. No worries, my dear. Hold tight. Send us that email. We'll get it all sorted. Tickety-boo. Now it's Toronto.
Hello, Dum-de-Dum. It's Mary in Toronto. I'm not contrary on Twitter. And I'm calling in response to Alice's conversation with her midwife. I think it was quite typical for Alice, given her high-achieving status, that she was very concerned with doing all the right things as part of her prenatal care. And I also appreciated the fact that the midwife talked about a fetal alcohol spectrum disorder being something where there's no quick diagnosis. It can't be picked up in a prenatal, antenatal scan. And, you know, it's a long road, I think she said, for children and families. So I think this is going to be quite a slow burn storyline if it's the issue they wish to focus on. I will tweet some links. As you know, I love to research public health information and link that to my love of the Archers. And, you know, there was a study in the United States saying the average age of diagnosis for FASD was about 4 years old. So this could be quite a long-term story, which would be good if they do it that way, because typically soaps try to compress the timeline. And I think also it's a good story just to highlight the fact that the scale of FASD is really unknown. The prevalence of it is probably much higher than previously thought. And, you know, the UK is one of the top five countries in terms of all people drinking alcohol during pregnancy. It's definitely an issue for a lot of people in the public health sector. All right. Keep good work and hope everyone's staying safe. And bye for now.
Wow. I love Mary Dr. Contrary's calls. They're so information packed, aren't they?
Yes.
That nugget about the 4 years old being the average age of diagnosis.
Yeah. And to my point earlier about, you know, it's a grim storyline, but it's one that's going to educate.
Yeah. And again, it makes us think about which route will they take with this? Will she have the baby and this all be a very, very long running storyline or not?
Yeah. If building on what Mary was saying, I mean, I think, yes, it would be great for them to be responsible and play it out in the long run, because they've invested pretty heavily in it. There should be a realistic ending that is cautionary to anyone who's kind of exposed to it or has the opportunity to learn from it. Can the information wait 4 years? That's 4 years of people not being able to react to it, or kind of you know, if the kid's born seemingly fine and we don't find out for 4 years, that's 4.5 years of people not being able to benefit from it. So
yeah, depending on how Alice handles that with her knowledge of how she behaved in the run-up.
In previous weeks, and including this week, I've tried to be delicate about people's, you know, differing opinions on, you know, the right to adoption or the right not to get through adoption, depending on your perspective. But, you know, it will be problematic if Alice does abort the fetus, then, you know, that could be seen by some people as an endorsement from the Archers and therefore the BBC on how to react to that situation. And then that's going to cause a lot of upset, I think. So, you know, it's going to be tricky for them.
People think it might be a miscarriage and the choice taken.
Right. Okay. Do you, Kerry, know whether it increases the, I mean, I imagine it would do, but increases the chances of miscarriage, drinking too much, or?
I honestly do not know, but I would imagine it would.
I have a clue.
But it's fascinating, isn't it? Well done to the Archers for having this as a potential and current storyline.
Yeah. Absolutely, and sorry to keep on saying it, but my intense discomfort with it does not sort of diminish my admiration for what they're doing.
Yeah,
I'm somewhat perturbed by the exact provenance of these gold coins that were found on Brookfield myself, right? Because I want to know what exactly are they? How comes Eddie, when he was there with his metal detector, well, about 20 years ago, Eddie didn't find them at Brookfield? What's all that about?
Jill planted them. She sort of tossed them by Ben's foot and went, "Oh, what's that by your foot?" to liven up his social life.
Drunken metal detecting syndrome. You know, excessive alcohol consumption during metal detecting results in, you know, poor results that only manifest 4 years later.
You know what, Pete? That's a good a shout as any. Mary, thank you for that. And thank you for, as Auntie Kerry Warburton says, for always being so informationally thick and dense. And I mean that in the most positive of ways when you call in with your caller in us, because you give us lots of things to ponder, and then you come out with the facts too. Last caller in of this week's episode, it's our Claire Asprey.
Hey there, Dumpty Dum. It's Claire from Clapham here. Had such a good time Friday with the Dumpty Dum crew. It was really lots of fun. Thanks, everyone, for being there. Was just ringing in about this last week, and I don't want to get embroiled in the whole is Gavin redeemable question, but I do want to make a plot prediction, and that is that Gavin has developed a conscience by living with the indentured labour. And I think that Gavin's emerging conscience, and he's now able to see them as human beings instead of horses. And I think that something to do with that is going to be one of the things that brings down Philip's slavery empire. And yeah, so I think whatever happens to bring down that whole arrangement, Gavin and his development of a conscience about it is going to be a key factor. That doesn't mean the same as it is that he's redeemable. I'm not getting into that. I just think that that's going to be part of that story. Also on Alice and Chris, Chris is being really almost overbearing. Like, if you didn't know that he was just like, you know, really adoring everything, you could mistake his behaviour at the moment for the kind of behaviour you would have expected from someone like Rob Tichenor, which is why it's so interesting, and so why people like Rob can get away with that kind of thing, because people don't realise. Anyway, keep up the good work, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Claire from Clapham. Yeah, yeah. The plot prediction.
No, I was just thinking that was a very interesting point about Chris that I hadn't considered.
Yeah.
And, you know, often when you and I talk, Kerry, about the archers, and you'll sort of point out some of these controlling behaviours, and then I'll immediately think, oh, God, you know, am I, you know, do I do that with at home? Am I one of those people? And then I immediately think, well, no, if I was one of those people, I probably wouldn't worry about it so much. But anyway, that was a really good point. You know, it's the killing with kindness. It's the, you know, it's the golden cage.
The smothering caringness and controlling somebody is, it's difficult to distinguish, isn't it, at times. And I do think, to her previous point about Gavin's conscience and so on, yes, definitely, we did discuss the fact that his conscience may well be what brings Philip down.
They did definitely make a point about that he'd enjoyed, you know, Philip had sort of slightly chided him for enjoying some time. You know, he'd made comment about the fact that Blake was quite good fun, you know, and that Mackenzie had been giving him some advice about dating, or I might be getting the names mixed up, but you know, that he had developed some kind of relationship with them when he'd been, you know, not locked away with them because he's the one doing the locking, but when he'd been sort of, you know, looking after them, so to speak. I do think it's valuable that they are, evil doesn't just arrive fully formed and packaged. It has to grow. Mm. It has to be developed. And, you know, they're doing a good job with Gavin at showing that. Unfortunately, it's massively undercut by this whole ridiculous gambling plotline that just blows. Every time you're starting to engage in a very serious matter of the slaving, then all of a sudden you've got this upstairs, downstairs, are you being served nonsense with the whole trying to hide that, you know, pretend it's all a gambling addiction. So, that's a shame.
It is.
Mm. A shame indeed. Auntie Kerry Warburton, do we have any emails with an H?
Yes, we do. It always takes me by surprise. Here I am. I'm opening up my folder with the documents in.
whilst you're doing that, then I'll fill for 20 seconds, because there was the winner of the Dumpty Dum talent show was Sarah Kunogan, and I know I have not pronounced that correctly. It sounds like you've got a Vietnamese surname there, Sarah. And she So we had Witherspoon, who counted back from 100 in increments of 7, really quite fast. We had Audrey Ann Karubias, who played her Korean drum, to spectacular feats of volume. It was just like so loud and so frenetic. It was amazing. We had Stephen Bowden, who did some live cocktail mixing. We had Francesca Word Salad, who played a rather rude song. We had some singing. It was just wonderful. But the winner was Sarah, who pulled out a US voting form and said, "I'm going to vote on air. Who should I vote for?" And the poignancy and the import of what she was doing wasn't lost on anybody. And it was a stunning talent to display, that she had the talent to pick the right future president and vice president of the United States. So well done to you, Sarah. You blew everyone's socks off, and it was an awesome talent to display. Does that give you enough time?
Oh, yes, I'm here. And actually, the first of the two emails that we received is from Mia Fox, and she's talking about the Zoom, saying, "Hi, Royfield. I just wanted to send heartfelt thanks for arranging the Dumpty Dum Zoom last night. I really enjoyed it, and Sunny was great too. I know it's a lot of effort, but it is so appreciated by many, many people." That's from Mia.
Oh, thank you, Mia.
Yeah. And then we have the second one is from Vicky Cole.
Ooh, good old Vicky Cole.
You do, don't you?
I know.
So do I. Yeah. So this one is, she says, "Hi, everyone. Hope you're all keeping well and safe. I hope Cosmo is on the mend. He was one of the first Dumpty Dummers I met, along with Andrew Horn and Glynn. I also managed to meet Mary Not Contrary and Victoria for gin in Toronto. Nice to hear Mary again recently, and thanks, Victoria, for getting in touch last week. And Jan as well. A few years ago now, isn't Dumpty Dum amazing? I was so sorry Zoom, but the time difference made it too hard. I'm looking forward to catching up with that soon. It sounded lots of fun. Nothing really specific about the Archers, but I had forgotten the feeling of waking up excited to hear the next episode. Time difference again, in brackets. Could I sneak my headphones on to listen without waking my husband up? And that feeling is back. Hurrah." Love to everyone from Vicky. And she also puts, "PS, you need to update the website info about the new hosts."
I do. And I also need to update it with the social media team, who give me all of their details. I'm actually going to do it next week. I'm going to clear away some time and I'm going to do it all next week, Vicky. And it's just a note for maybe for newer Dumpty Dummers. They probably won't know, but like Vicky, when she first started listening to the show, she was Vicky from Kenya. And one of her very first calls, you could hear the cicadas in the background and the roar of the lions. And I kid you not. And we had to say, "Where exactly are?" And she was, "Yeah, I'm like basically on in the plains and in Kenya." And now her and her hubby have actually moved to Sri Lanka. And the reason why that is significant is because she went traveling through Canada a few years back, and through Dumpty Dum, she met Mary Not Contrary in Toronto, and then has gone back to the UK and gone to London and met Cosmo and met Andrew Horn. And it just goes to underline that, yeah, we prattle on about the Archers. And I try and keep up with the intellectual debate that Kerry and Peter have. And I just talk about films that I've watched because I can't quite keep up most of the time. But in and around all of this Archers chat is just a wonderful community of people who have made friends all over the globe. So if you are going to go traveling somewhere and you want to reach out to people, why don't you go on to dumdydum.com or go on to the Facebook group and say, "I am traveling too." And invariably, there's always one or two Dumpty Dummers who live where you're going and will, buy you a drink somewhere, bake you a cake, just do wonderful, lovely things for you. And Vicky Cole is proof positive of that. We're going to take five, which is a ridiculous thing to say on a podcast, but we're going to have a little bit of a break. You might hear an advert and we're going to come back the other side and it's going to be some socials and it's Elsa.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
What a week. This week we've had our Dumb to Dumb Live with Sunny Ormond. Reminder to put Sunny on my baby names list. And people were raving about it on the Facebook group. If you missed it, you can catch it now. It's posted on the group. Which, by the way, is really buzzing. It's a really friendly place to chat all things Ambridge, so if you aren't there yet, please come on board. You can find it by searching DumTDum, not DumDDum, on Facebook. You'll have to answer a mystery question to get that in, so don't forget to do that. This week started with me not knowing the difference between Ben and Johnny, and to be honest, the rest of the teenage boys in Ambridge. And wondering if Ben or Johnny or whoever, what they would do with their lottery winnings and what you might do with them. We had lots of suggestions, maybe giving it to local charities, but mostly we had people ribbing me for not being a committed enough Archers fan. On the back of this, I asked you which characters you got mixed up. Mine being all the teenage boys. I think it's of it as standing up to the patriarchy. Kate and Alice and Jim and Oliver. Tom and Rex also came in fairly high, which I completely agree with, and Stephen said that he can never distinguish between the Montbelliards and the Herefords. Moolala! Emma didn't think that the midwife who was berating Alice about her drinking rang true. No empathy or friendliness. And like Emma, I've never met a midwife like that. Alice would also have had to have time with the midwife without Chris there. It's like a safeguarding protocol that I've had with each of my pregnancies, but which wasn't told to us. Maybe that happened off. Liz is wondering if Alice will be able to stick to her no alcohol pledge, or if she'll fall at the first sign of stress. Keith is concerned that the damage has already been done, and Carolyn is convinced that she's going to slip up, saying that at some point she's going to rationalise her drinking by saying the damage is already done. Suzanne is finding relief in the buried treasure storyline, which I agree with. It's all got pretty heavy since the proper Archers came back, and it's so lovely to see that intergenerational relationship flourish. And how I'd love to hear the Dumb to Dumb storyline about Royfield and his nan chatting away. Elvis is wondering if Jenny Darling was crying so much at the idea of becoming even more related to a horror bin, with Lynn replying that their gene pools are now even more mixed. But Julie was just happy to hear her voice again. And then the final point, which I'm going to make, was from Andrew. I thought this was really interesting. He was asking why posh ex-drug dealers, Freddie, are forgiven when working-class modern slavers, Gavin, are perhaps not. The comments echoed my opinion that Freddie's drugs transgression was not in the same ballpark as owning human beings. It's a more complicated conversation than a straight comparison. However, I did think it was an interesting point, and it would be interesting to see if a working-class kid from the village would be offered the same olive branch that Freddie has been. And whilst on the topic of Blake and Kenzie and Gavin and Philip, I just wanted to remind everybody about the point that someone brought up on a previous episode about not referring to them as, and I'll say it now, but I don't like saying it, horses, ourselves. It's a really horrible term, and like we wouldn't use the N-word, I don't think we should say it. I think that also the word slave puts the blame on Blake and Kenzie rather than the people in the wrong, the enslavers. So maybe we should be using the term enslaved people instead. My preference is just to use their names, but in a case that where we're talking about them as a group, maybe. Enslaved people. Just a thought. Anyway, on that cheerful note, it's goodbye from me, and I'll see you in a few weeks.
Elsa, lovely to hear you, my dear. Auntie Kerry Warburton, you used to do Tweets of the Week, didn't you?
I used to, but then I handed that over to the lovely Peter Fickling.
Yay!
Peter! Give us some tweets right. of the last 7 days, sir.
Well, I'm going to warbis the hell out of this because I am, I'm just relying on some old favourites, and I'm also using a bit of nepotism anyway. what is it I always say? It's gold, silver, bronze, starting with bronze, as is traditional. So arguably Kerry's favourite Ambridge Twitterer, a bit buddish, says, oh, for heaven's sakes, buried treasure, winning scratch cards. Was Ambridge founded on by a leprechaun with the world's biggest lucky foot, rabbit's foot collection? God, that's one hell of a sentence to say. I'm going to say it again. Oh, for heaven's sake, buried treasure, winning scratch cards. Was Ambridge founded by a leprechaun with the world's biggest lucky rabbit's foot collection? I got through it that time, yeah. Anyway, so that was a bit buddish. And now, silver position. David from Barnet, spelt exactly as you'd think. Quick, the Archer scriptwriters, start working on a screwball comedy spin-off where 90-year-old Jill ends up visiting Ben and getting stuck at his quarantine university for Freshers Week.
Foam party!
Yeah, there does seem to be a genuine affection between the two of them. And
I like that a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I should call my lovely grandmother. I don't call her as much as I used to, and I need to get back on that. It's all the tiny tyrant's fault, the child. But I'll use that as a cue because it is. And I like the way that Ben's turning out as well. I mean, he's nothing like either of his parents, and that's very high praise.
It is.
Yeah, and actually, while we're on it, how poisonous was Ruth in dealing with Ben when he went talk to her about the coins?
Yeah, I mean, she hated the idea of trenches.
Yeah, because I asked Kerry, it'd be interesting to get your opinion about this. I asked Kerry, if either of her adult children came to her excited about some kind of harebrained scheme to do with them, the house, or, even messing with, like Kerry's business a bit. I mean, you'd start from a position of positivity. That was your point, wasn't it, Kerry?
Yeah, definitely. You would embrace it, listen, encourage it. She was awful until... it was discovered that they were Anglo-Saxon coins. And she was like, woohoo, this could be great for us.
Yeah, and before Royfield gives his opinion, sorry, I've just invited Royfield's opinion and immediately gone elsewhere. Ruth doesn't even have the excuse of having awful parents. Her mother was lovely.
Yeah, I know. Royfield, anyway. Ruth, what do you think of her?
What I think of her is that she's definitely one of the voices we should have heard a monologue for, because you get to understand her more. Just like what Peter said, that, from what we know about Ruth, she had a lovely mum. So why is Ruth this slightly detached figure from the whole of Archersdom? A monologue from Ruth would have actually, filled in the cracks, so to speak, there. You know, that would have been a bit of grout in
there. Maybe that's what she needs.
Mm. There you go. But in terms of, yes, peeing all over Ben's parade, yes, you did that spectacularly. And he is a teenage boy and he's every reason to get excited about finding some golden coins or some old coins, sorry, on the farm. And yes, she should have been a much more gracious adult and says, yes, I'm excited too. And then maybe slightly then tried to like bring him down. But yeah, she is somewhat of a curmudgeon. But I want to know the reason why. Do I actually really want to hear a monologue from Ruth? No. But I actually find her one of the more fascinating characters because even though she's in it loads, we don't really know an awful lot about her other than she can't cook. That's fundamentally what we know. She can't cook.
And that David worries about whether she loves him or not.
Yes. But we got that completely from him, didn't we? And actually from Tim, from the act, that's his interpretation. I don't know how that is, you know, how explicitly that's ever been voiced, but it made a whole load of sense when he said that.
It did. I did love, sorry, Peter, you can get to gold in a moment, but I did love Jill saying that David is a glass half empty, risk averse person. She was dissing our David, wasn't she? Which I quite enjoyed.
We can have gold.
Oh yeah. The Twitter, the Twitters. Anyway, so a bit of behind the scenes action here, listeners. Before the podcast started recording, Roy Field was putting me under painful pressure to include one of his tweets. Kerry, you were there.
I am witness to this. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, to show you, this is not
correct. Did I say that with any level of seriousness, Peter?
Yes.
Oh, God.
You're famed for your sincerity and your seriousness. Anyway, so I did not buckle under managerial pressure, but however, there is a little bit of nepotism going on because it's our very own and dear Rosie Porty at Porty Rosie. And she says, in a gold position, pregnancy chat questions. If in my early pregnancy I drank 4 bottles of Blue Nun plus 2 bottles of vodka plus 3 bottles of cherry brandy a day, will taking an Aldi multivitamin reverse the impact?
Yes, that is a cracker.
Yeah.
And brilliant.
Yeah, because that was pretty much Alice's response, was it? Well, Chris's response
yes,
was like,
well,
we better get, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
But also, yes, interesting choice of drinks, Rosie. I'm like, you know, I think some of that's been chosen for comedic value, but I have a feeling the cherry brandy might be an actual tipple of choice. Yeah, I reckon Rosie might like a bit of cherry brandy. I have no reason to. That's not based on anything more than just instinct. But yeah, anyway, so gold tweet of the week. Congratulations.
I'd like to have a cherry brandy with Rosie.
Yeah, Rosie. I mean, Rosie has a very acerbic and dry wit. I would very much enjoy experiencing that in person.
Mm. We need a Christmas get together if we're allowed by the government.
Or if they screw it up so catastrophically, it just, you know, the whole country descends into a kind of a giant sort of bacchanal, and then we can just meet whenever we want.
Is there a tier where you have to drink cherry brandy?
Yeah. Well, only if you're in the south. If you're in the south, you can do whatever you want. But this nebulous north, someone was getting very righteously indignant on, and when I say righteously, I mean I agree with them on the other day, saying, "Can you stop calling it the north? It's a geographically and socially complex, you know, a collection of regions, and just keep on calling us the north is incredibly patronising and irritating." And I thought, yes, it is.
Does the South not happen then?
But I guess the seat of power is in the South, isn't it? And also it's specific to COVID. The restrictions have. I mean, I guess that there have, you know, statistically there have been higher levels of COVID in the North, but still the way it's being dealt with, it's kind of, you know, it when the messaging is also kind of like, naughty people going out and obeying the rules and drinking in the places we told you to and leaving, you know, going to these different events that we told you to go to. So it's a bit of a slap in the face. And, you know, and when it's twinned with that language, it's, you know, it just doubles down.
It reminds me of when I got on a train from Brighton to go to London once to meet my friend James. And I knew it had all gone wrong when I looked out of the window in the darkness and saw that motorway sign that said the north. Yes, I was on a train. I could see it. And I thought, I think I've gone a bit wrong here. And had to get off at Luton and go back.
But Kerry, you're the perfect hybrid, aren't you? Because you've got a foot in both camps. You're sort of fully invested in the north and the south. Yeah,
I am indeed. Yes, I have a slight northern twang, having lived there for 12 years. I have a deep affection for Yorkshire and the north.
Yeah, I am a big, big fan of the north, and I have no reason to be, except for just going there and thinking it's amazing.
But there
I am a hypocrite, Kerry, just describing it as the north. You know, my love of, I can't even be bothered to love the north in specific and thoughtful ways. I just, my love is just this horrible smothering blanket.
We're humans, Peter. We're fallible.
Yes, that's painfully true, yeah.
What I always noticed about the north when I was a teenager and travelling up the M6 was you never got there. There were signs saying the north. And then when you got to Scotland, you're in Scotland. You're, well, where's the north then? You never get to the north on a motorway. Dumdydum.com, go there. It's got shops, got lots of awesome things you can do there, folks. You can post comments on past shows. You can sign up when it works, Miranda. We're going to make it work. And then you can like message people and you can like hang out with other Dumpty Dummers. So, and we used to do the map thing. Remember that, folks? People of a certain vintage, you could pin yourself to a map, which really then did help when people were traveling around the world. Not even just the world, just the UK. We're going to try and bring that back. So dumdydum.com, folks. Awesome things you can do on there. Make of it what you can. That's what I say. Now, Patreon. Patreon is wonderful. And I keep saying this every week and I keep on forgetting. Now, Peter and Kerry gave me a right kicking yesterday. Some of it was maybe deserved. I'll say that with a lot of humility. But what I need to do is I need to prep more. And when I prep more, it means that I will actually do the Excel spreadsheet, which has all of the Patreons and all of the PayPal donators, because you people are bloody important. And it's only right and proper that at least once, twice a year, I read out from that august Excel spreadsheet all of your names and give you your due time in the spotlight as being people that don't just listen to the podcast, but put your hands in your wallets and in your purses and actually contribute to it. It's going to happen next week. Going to do my prep. I'm not going to let you down. If you would like to be on that list, why don't you go to patreon.com and donate $2 per show. And basically what it means is that when stuff needs paying for, it gets paid for. Today is a case in point. We had some technical issues yet again with Zencaster. So I had to get the old wallet out and get it sorted so it could have clean feed. And that's the reason why the Patreons are so close to our hearts, because it means that when stuff goes south, things can get paid for. So patreon.com, go there if you'd like to support this podcast and to keep the good ship Dumby Dum afloat. Aren't you Kerry Warburton?
Yes. Sorry, my phone just went into, sorry about this. It just shut down. Okay, I'm awfully, awfully sorry. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105 to leave a message or send a text message starting with DUM to 077 862 0070.
And Twitter. I'm not going to go on too much about Twitter. You know the drill. Peter's on Twitter. Kerry's on Twitter. Dumdydum's on Twitter. And Peter's got news from Twitter.
So Miranda called in earlier, requesting more interaction. I followed her on air, assuming that doesn't get edited by Royfield. And it's already happening. There's messages pinging backwards and forwards between from Miranda. She just liked me a tweet I put out where I was giving Lawrence Fox a kicking. So if you want some Lawrence Fox kicking action, get to Apple and Android app and me. Yes, that's where it's happening.
Crumbs. There you go. Instant feedback loop, folks. Instant. Now, Peter Ficklin, if somebody does want to, you know, ping you, enter into a dialogue with you, you know, just like socially play with you on Twitter, how can they do that?
at Pete Ficklin.
Smashing.
Spells you think, yeah.
On to Kerry Warburton. Your surname is not Warburton. And are you actually an auntie?
I am an auntie to Billy and Nancy, who live in Wick. They are good names, aren't they? Strong. They live in Wickfield in York with my brother, who's their dad, and his lovely wife, Tara. Hello. I am at Kerry Warbis, which is KerriWarbis. About the tweets, I did want to say about remember when tweeting about the Archers, use the capitalised hashtag of hashtag the Archers, using a capital T and a capital A, because it helps visually impaired people who use their screen readers. So a bit of sensibleness there.
Yeah, well done. I'm going to forgo telling you to follow me on Twitter, because I always go, well, that's just like a bit of a crapshoot, basically. You don't know what you're going to get if you follow me on Twitter. But if you've got a little bit of time, maybe on your Sunday, you know, Sunday afternoon, you've had a little bit of, you've had your roast dinner, you're just loosening your belt. The family are going off doing whatever they're doing. Do you want to settle down with something? Why don't you give my 10 American presidents a little bit of an airing? I only do about 4 or 5 of them a year because it takes me forever to do them. And this week is part one of Reagan. There's no two ways about it. In the last 40 years of American history, he's been the most pivotal president, and he helped shape the neoliberal world that we are saddled with today. So I'm kind of giving the game away as to what I think about him, really. But he was an incredibly charismatic person who has an incredible backstory. And I look at that in this month's 10 American Presidents, which only goes up to his time when he gives up the governorship of California. So we look at his career in Hollywood and a whole load of other things besides, and his drift leftwards, because he starts off being somewhat of a bit of a social radical. He was a Democrat, he was a lefty, and he ends up being an arch Republican, an arch conservative. So go listen to that and let me know what you think. It's Reagan part one. Facebook. If you like Facebook, go on to Facebook, type in dum-de-dum, and you'll get yourself some dum-de-dum on Facebook. Now, before I say ta-ra a bit, I'm going to hand the mic over to my two podcasting buddies for them to talk about something which is maybe interested them, exercised them, perplexed them since we last were on air. Now, Auntie Kerry Warburton, you first. Would you like to talk about anything? Is there anything on your chest? Right, that's that. Pete Fickling. Would you like to fill in dead air, sir? And would you like to pontificate on a topic?
Just a bit of general sort of Kerry wrangling advice for everyone, really. Don't ever put a double entendre in front of Kerry and expect some kind of serious response. It's not going to happen, and you're not going to get one. So that's
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah. Smashing. Right.
Yeah.
Well done. If I came out with a double entendre, it was completely and utterly not meant. So if I said something silly, I really do apologise. And I don't even know what I'm supposed to have said, other than I just thought I'd put you on the spot. Anyway, that's me. That's been another week discussing all things Ambridge. I talked about rocks. I've talked about Ronald Reagan. And in between all of that, you had some full-on chat about Borsetshire. Ta-ra a bit.
Bye.
Pete, do you want to say goodbye?
Oh, ta-ra a bit.
No, you can't say that, Pete. That's my sign-off. Have your own sign-off. Come on.
What do they say in South-East London?
I'll do my posh southerner thing then. You know, chin-chin.